I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We are rescuing these people, pulling out the living, the torn apart, and the martyrs. That's what we're doing.
Oil strikes central Beirut, Yemen, and Gaza after a massive attack Friday on a Beirut suburb that killed Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, one of the most powerful figures in the region.
And to the Ayatollah's regime, I say those who strike us, we will strike them. There is no place in Iran or the Middle East that the long arm of Israel cannot reach.
We'll go to Beirut and Tel Aviv for the latest. We'll also look at Iran's response with Iranian-American Trita Parsi, vice president of the Quincy Institute. His new piece, Nasrallah Assassinated, What Happens Next? Then Hurricane Helene tears through the southeastern United States after hitting Florida as a Category 4 storm. As scientists say, climate change rapidly intensifies hurricanes, and Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump downplays the danger.
Alabama and all of the other states who have been really hit hard by that very large hurricane. That was that big one, a very large hurricane this week. We're with you all the way, and if we were there, we'd be helping you, and you'll be okay.
We'll speak with climate scientist Peter Kalmus in Raleigh, North Carolina. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Lebanon's marking 3 days of mourning after Israel assassinates Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah Friday in a massive attack that leveled multiple high-rise apartment buildings in the suburb south of Beirut. Nasrallah had led Hezbollah since 1992, was widely considered one of the most powerful figures in the Middle East. Multiple news outlets report Israel likely used U.S.-made 2,000-pound Blue 109 bombs in the attack. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris both described Nasrallah's death as a, quote, measure of justice. But on the streets of Beirut, Lebanese residents vowed to keep resisting the Israeli attacks.
You won't be able to destroy us. Whatever you do, however much you bomb, however much you displace people, we will stay here. We won't leave. This is our country, and we're staying. Do whatever you want to do. We don't care.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave the order to kill Nasrallah shortly after giving a speech at the United Nations General Assembly here in New York. As he was being introduced at the UN, dozens of diplomats walked out of the General Assembly hall in protest. Iran responded to the assassination of Nasrallah by seeking an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council, warning Israel is, quote, pushing the entire region into an all-out catastrophe, unquote. A prominent general in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was also killed in Friday's attack on Nasrallah. Over the past 24 hours, Israeli strikes in Lebanon killed at least 105 people, bringing the death toll over the past 2 weeks to more than 1,000 Lebanese, with 6,000 people injured. The Israeli attacks have also displaced about 1 million people in Lebanon. More than 100,000 have fled from Lebanon to Syria. Earlier today, Israel killed the head of Hamas in Lebanon, along with his wife, son, and daughter, in a strike on their home in a Palestinian refugee camp. A separate strike inside Beirut, Israel killed three members of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Fears are now growing Israel may soon launch a ground invasion of Lebanon. Earlier today, Hezbollah's deputy leader, Sheikh Naim Qassem, vowed the group is ready to confront an Israeli invasion. In Gaza, Israel is continuing to attack schools where displaced Palestinians have sought shelter. Earlier today, an Israeli warplane bombed a school in Beit Lahia, killing at least two people. In Deir al-Balah, another Israeli strike killed Palestinian journalist Wafa al-Udaini and three of her family members, including two children. On Sunday, at least four people were killed in northern Gaza in another Israeli strike on a school-turned-shelter. Israel also launched a large attack on Yemen's port of Hodeidah on Sunday, one day after the Houthis fired a missile at Tel Aviv. The Yemeni health ministry said at least four people were killed and 29 injured in the Israeli attack. An unprecedented tragedy. Those were the words of North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper after Hurricane Helene devastated a swath of the country from Florida to Tennessee. The storm's death toll is nearing 100 and expected to rise as search and rescue teams reach areas cut off by catastrophic flooding and landslides. Millions have lost power in what's expected to become one of the costliest hurricanes in U.S. history. At least 30 deaths occurred in Buncombe County, North Carolina, where the city of Asheville has been largely cut off after the Swannanoa River crested 6 feet above previous records, flooding entire neighborhoods. Asheville officials said residents may not have access to clean water for weeks after the storm severely damaged the city's water treatment plant and piping system. Food and water are now being airlifted into Asheville, since many roads leading in the area have been destroyed. Hurricane Helene made landfall on Friday in Florida's Big Bend as a 140-mile-per-hour Category 4 hurricane that had been fueled by abnormally warm water in the Gulf of Mexico. On Saturday, Greenpeace posted a message on social media reading, quote, "Hurricane Helene must be a wake-up call for climate justice." In Nepal, nonstop monsoon rains and floods over the weekend killed nearly 200 people as rescue teams continue to search through the wreckage in the capital, Kathmandu. People were left marooned on rooftops as streets turned into rivers and major roadways became blocked. It was Kathmandu's heaviest rainfall in half a century as the climate crisis intensifies extreme weather events. Spanish authorities say 48 people are missing after a boat carrying refugees from Mali, Mauritania, and Senegal capsized near the Canary Islands. 9 deaths, including a child, have been confirmed. Another 27 people have been rescued. The disaster could become the deadliest in the Canary Islands in 30 years. A Spanish nonprofit reports an average of 33 deaths per day for refugees trying to reach Spain in the first 5 months of this year, as many European governments continue to crack down on asylum seekers and promote xenophobic rhetoric. In Austria, the far-right Freedom Party won this weekend's parliamentary election, edging out the ruling conservatives and sending shockwaves throughout Europe. But it's unclear if the Freedom Party will be able to form a governing coalition, as all of its rivals have ruled out collaboration. Party leader Herbert Kickl ran on a nationalist platform pledging to restrict asylum and migration and expel non-EU citizens. The Freedom Party was founded in the wake of World War II by former Nazis. On Sunday, protesters gathered outside the parliament building in Vienna chanting, "Nazis, get out of parliament."
That means social cuts for Austria. That means lower salaries. That means a catastrophe, especially for migrants and for the women who are demonstrating in favor of abortion again. We started demonstrating 40 years ago, and I can't do it anymore.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Moscow of waging war on hospitals after Russia struck a hospital in the city of Sumy, killing 10 people. Meanwhile, Ukraine launched one of its largest drone strikes on Russia Saturday night. Russian military authorities report they shot down 125 drones during the attack. Authorities in Egypt are refusing to release Ali Abdel Fattah, the country's most prominent political prisoner. He was due to be released on Sunday after serving a 5-year sentence, but his sentence has been extended by another 2 years. Last week, a coalition of 59 civil society organizations called for Egypt to release the British Egyptian activist. His mother, Leila Swaif, spoke to Reuters last week.
I'm definitely angry, really angry from the way things are happening, and of course angry about him continuing to be imprisoned. He wasn't supposed to be in jail for 5 years, let alone the 5 years before in his first jail term. I'm angry about what happened now and what is happening, but I don't have the feeling that I was expecting something to happen, and it did not happen. I never expect good things.
To see our interviews with Ala's mother and sister in Egypt, go to democracynow.org. Vice President Kamala Harris visited the U.S.-Mexico border in Arizona Friday and pushed for new restrictions on asylum seekers.
Those who cross our borders unlawfully will be apprehended and removed and barred from reentering for 5 years. We will pursue more severe criminal charges against repeat violators. And if someone does not make an asylum request at a legal point of entry and instead crosses our border unlawfully, they will be barred from receiving asylum.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump is escalating his anti-immigrant rhetoric, describing immigrants as animals during a campaign rally in Wisconsin.
They don't commit crimes like us. No, no. They make our criminals look like babies. These are stone-cold killers. They'll walk into your kitchen, they'll cut your throat.
During the same speech, he claimed Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were both mentally impaired. Meanwhile, Senator J.D. Vance and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz are preparing for Tuesday's vice presidential debate here in New York. In other election news, the Department of Justice has sued the state of Alabama after it purged more than 3,000 names from its voter rolls. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom is facing backlash from artists, lawmakers, labor groups, and others after he vetoed a bill Sunday that sought to regulate the artificial intelligence industry. The bill would have required tech companies to stress test AI models before releasing them on the market, held companies legally liable for harms caused by their AI technology, and enabled a kill switch for AI technology that was abused or went rogue. Backers of the bill accused Governor Newsom of being in the pocket of Silicon Valley. In Georgia, a fire at the BioLab chemical plant in Conyers sent massive plumes of thick smoke into the air Sunday, prompting the evacuation of some 17,000 residents and shelter-in-place orders for others. It's BioLab's third fire in 7 years. Conyers has a majority black population. And in the UK, climate activists from Just Stop Oil threw cans of tomato soup at two Vincent van Gogh paintings, including sunflowers, at London's National Gallery on Friday. The action came just hours after a London judge sentenced two other activists to prison for throwing soup at the same painting and gluing themselves to the walls of the National Gallery 2 years ago. The judge said his harsh sentences of up to 2 years in prison for Phoebe Plummer and Anna Holland, both in their early 20s, was meant to deter protesters from such acts of civil disobedience. It's the latest in a string of criminal prosecutions against activists in the UK. Ahead of Friday's sentence, over 100 artists and art workers signed an open letter asking for leniency for Plummer and Holland. Protesters also rallied outside the London court to show support for the two activists who've been described as political prisoners.
Recently in this country, peaceful, non-violent people who protested weren't locked up. That was really rare. And in the last few years, and particularly in the last sort of 2 months, basically, almost 50 people have been locked up for daring to non-violently, you know, resist the oil industry, resist the genocide in Gaza. And that's just not acceptable in a democracy.
And those are some of the headlines This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. News reports from northern Israel show Israeli military tanks massing along the Israel-Lebanon border after Israel launched its first attack in central Beirut. Earlier today, Israel struck a building near the busy Kola Bridge intersection of the Lebanese capital after carrying out a massive attack Friday on a Beirut suburb that assassinated Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. He led Hezbollah for more than three decades and was considered one of the most powerful figures in the Middle East. Israel likely used U.S.-made bombs in Friday's attack that leveled several high-rise apartment buildings. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris both called the killing of Nasrallah a, quote, measure of justice. Meanwhile, Monday's attack targeted senior figures in the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Palestinian militant group. The strike leveled another apartment building.
We are Palestinian firefighters and rescuers from the camps in Lebanon who came to help our brothers after the raid that happened here in Ain Ed Delb. We have been here since yesterday, since the incident. We have not left the site, and we will remain here until we complete the entire mission, God willing. There are still people under the rubble, people we have not been able to rescue yet. We are doing everything we can to save them as quickly as possible.
So today, Israel killed the head of Hamas in Lebanon, along with his wife, son, and daughter, in a strike on their home in a Palestinian refugee camp. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave the order to kill Nasrallah shortly after giving a speech before the UN General Assembly. Before his remarks, dozens of diplomats walked out of the UN General Assembly hall in protest. Today, Hezbollah's deputy leader, Sheikh Naim Qassem, vowed to fight on, saying the group is prepared for a long war in his first speech since Nasrallah was killed.
Israel is committing massacres in all areas of Lebanon and choosing villages one by one until there is no village or house that does not have traces of Israeli aggression in it. It is attacking civilians, health organizations, all Rizala scouts, all those who are in the streets and all those who are staying in their homes, including children, women and the elderly. These people are not fighting the fighters, but rather are killing and committing massacres against civilians and innocents. The Islamic resistance will continue to confront the Israeli enemy in support of Gaza and Palestine in defense of Lebanon.
Over the past 24 hours, Israeli strikes in Lebanon have killed at least 105 people, bringing the death toll over the past 2 weeks to over 1,000, with 6,000 people injured. The Israeli attacks have displaced about 1 million people in Lebanon. More than 100,000 have fled from Lebanon to Syria, according to the United Nations. Meanwhile, Israel forces launched a wave of airstrikes on Yemen Sunday, targeting the city of Hodeidah for the second time in recent months in response to missile fires by Houthi militants. This comes as more than 1,000 Israelis protested in Tel Aviv on Saturday to call on Prime Minister Netanyahu to refocus his efforts on securing the release of hostages in Gaza, where the death toll for from nearly a year of Israeli attacks is nearing at least 42,000. For more, we begin in Beirut to speak with Karim Chahayeb, the Beirut-based journalist reporting on Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the Associated Press. His recent piece for AP is headlined, What to Know After Israel's Assassination of Hezbollah Leader Hassan Nasrallah. Karim, welcome to Democracy Now! Well, why don't you tell us about the significance of this assassination and who exactly the Hezbollah leader was?
So this assassination really rattled all of Lebanon. Hassan Nasrallah for decades led Hezbollah and oversaw significant developments within the militant group, oversaw, ending Israel's occupation of southern Lebanon, Hezbollah's sort of transformation into having a more heavy involvement in Lebanese politics with MPs, parliamentarians, ministers, and so on. And also led Hezbollah when it began to expand more regionally, notably in Syria, where they played a pivotal role in keeping Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in power. The news really shocked all of Lebanon, both supporters and people who oppose him. I recall I was on the streets here in Beirut when the news happened, and some of his supporters were screaming. They were waiting, shocked by the news. And, you know, they thought that this was a leader. Some told me that they felt like he was immortal, almost. And, of course, his assassination on top of a handful of Hezbollah leaders, seven senior leaders over the past 8 days, really rattled the organization. Even the deputy leader, Naim Qasem, said so today. But he said that they're going to regroup and appoint a new leader soon. It's unclear when. And it's definitely something that rattled the region, for sure.
I want to go to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking this weekend.
Nasrallah was not just another terrorist. He was the terrorist. He was the axis of the axis, the main engine of Iran's axis of evil. He and his people were the architects of the plan to destroy Israel. As long as Nasrallah was alive, he would have quickly rebuilt the capabilities we took from Hezbollah. Therefore, I gave the directive, and Nasrallah is no longer with us.
If you can respond, Karim, to what the Israeli prime minister said after the assassination, and also what has happened since, both the killing of a top-level Iranian commander, along with Nasrallah, and now the head of Hamas in Lebanon with his family.
So, you know, a lot of people after the assassination of Nasrallah sort of wondered, you know, what happens next now. The Israeli government maintains that their goal is to, you know, secure their north for their residents to return. And, you know, since the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah, other senior officials have been assassinated as well. And the airstrikes, you know, aren't stopping. They're continuing. And now people are anticipating a ground invasion. And, of course, experts say that Iran is sort of in a policy dilemma. You know, Iran has dealt with several attacks that are widely blamed on Israel, including a strike on a consulate building in Syria and the killing of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran in late July. Iran hasn't necessarily responded in such a decisive way. And the question is, you know, what are Tehran's red lines? We don't know how they're going to respond to that and what this means for the region. What we do know is that, you know, they've sort of maintained that they're going to keep piling diplomatic pressure. This is according to statements from different Iranian government officials. But the big question is, given the, you know, the severity of this attack, you know, will this eventually not just widen the war in Lebanon, but also have a regional component? Iran has, you know, proxies in Yemen and Iraq, and there's a lot of speculation as to whether they will be involved or not. So there is a really big sort of gap as to what happens next in this very intense phase of the war.
Karim, we're speaking to you in Beirut, so you're not only a journalist covering all of this, you're a resident there. Can you describe what the blast was like in the suburb on Friday, and then this Beirut-based blast that just took place?
Yeah, the airstrike in the Beirut southern suburbs that killed Hassan Nasrallah was probably one of the most, if not the most, intense strike thus far in this conflict. You know, eyewitnesses and others, even as actually close to this office, you know, heard 8 to 10 explosions. There were multiple airstrikes, and it leveled several buildings to the ground. It was a very shocking experience for many here. A lot of people were, you know, panicking, and it definitely sparked a wave of displacement. A lot of people in the Beirut southern suburbs, you know, immediately fled their homes and, you know, went in large groups to other neighborhoods in Beirut to find safety. And then the strike yesterday near the Kola Bridge, you know, it's a very central part of the city. It's very busy during the day. It's a critical point for public transportation as well. And this is the most central part of Beirut where Israel has struck so far in this conflict. And, you know, a lot of the questions now among people here is, you know, where else will be hit, given that it appears that, you know, central parts of the city are could be possible targets. And this is not limited to just the south or the east of Lebanon anymore. So there's a lot of fear and anxiety and confusion among residents all over Beirut. Where over the past, you know, previous months, where the fighting was mostly limited to southern Lebanon, you didn't really feel that so much.
And we just have reports, I mean, and this has been going on for days, of Israeli tanks amassing along the border. What is the response of the Lebanese to what is taking place? I mean, Lebanon has one of the most, if not the highest percentage refugee population in the world. Now, 1 million people are displaced. Many are trying to go into Syria right now.
Yes. So, you know, the Lebanese government has sounded the alarm on a massive displacement. Prior to this recent intense escalation, I guess, you know, there was, you know, over 100,000 displaced people. Now that number is almost 1 million in such a short period of time. The Lebanese government is struggling to keep up. Remember, this is a country that's going through an economic crisis. The government is essentially broke. And the United Nations is trying to get as much funds as it can to support. And a lot of what's helping these displaced people here is just the goodwill of a lot of people, community initiatives and so on. A lot of people I speak to in Beirut and elsewhere are doing their best, but they're questioning how sustainable it is, you know, within just a couple of weeks. And yes, it does seem like a larger number are going to Syria as well. So it's indicative of the desperation taking place. And of course, you know, a possible ground invasion is certainly the talk of the town right now. And people are wondering what the consequences will be, whether it means this war will last for a much longer time and it will further widen the displacement. So, you know, it is definitely a critical time. The Lebanese government, is trying to sort of push a recent, you know, U.S.-led initiative for a temporary ceasefire for 21 days. The French foreign ministers in town met with the prime minister and the speaker of parliament. And, you know, it appears that the message that they're sending is that they're willing to, you know, go about the ceasefire and, you know, and try and put an end to this war as quickly as possible. The question is whether, you know, Hezbollah at the same time, you know, whether they will change their approach to this. You know, Hezbollah have maintained, even after Nasrallah's assassination, that they will stop once there's a ceasefire in Gaza. And they accused the Israelis and the American government of basically wanting them to set up a deal independent of Gaza. So the question really is, how can this diplomatic gridlock be broken? And I think we could be at a major turning point right now, given the heightened developments.
Do you see Lebanese troops joining or replacing Hezbollah militants on the border?
There is certainly a lot of speculation that has come about, you know, the fate of Lebanon politically and with the war after Nasrallah's assassination. There are allied groups to Hezbollah that have been involved in the south since the beginning. You know, for example, the Fajr Brigades of the Islamic Group, which is the branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas, early on as well, here in Lebanon, were involved as well. And, you know, the question, of course, is if there's a ground invasion, will more groups allied that have, you know, some sort of weapons be involved? Appears that most experts say that it might actually be more about the allies of Hezbollah outside of Lebanon, whether the Houthis in Yemen or the Iran-backed militias in Iraq will be much more involved. So that is sort of the big question right now, given a possible ground invasion.
Karim Chahayeb, we want to thank you for being with us, speaking to us from Beirut, journalist covering Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the Associated Press. We'll link to your piece, What to Know After Israel's Assassination of Hezbollah Leader Hassan Nasrallah. When we come back, we'll be joined by Gideon Levy in Tel Aviv, the award-winning Israeli journalist and author, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, a member of its editorial board. One of his latest pieces the Haaretz newspaper, Israel's barbaric lee over Nasrallah's assassination is a new low for Israeli society. Back in 20 seconds.
بعون الله يا صابر لبنان الحاسد نصر الله.
Palestinian song Hawk of Lebanon. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. The War and Peace Report. As Israel strikes central Beirut, Yemen, and Gaza after the massive attack Friday in the Beirut suburb that killed the Hezbollah leader